This podcast brought to you by Numa Solutions.
I can't see it.
ADA Title II has a real compliance deadline, April 2026. Public entities are required to make their digital content accessible, including websites, PDFs, reports, applications, and public records. If a document cannot be read with a screen reader, it is not compliant. And if it is not compliant, blind people are still being denied equal access. For a clear explanation of what the rule requires, visit www.title2.info. It's one of the leading resources explaining what agencies must do and when. This message is brought to you by Numa Solutions. We have remediated hundreds of thousands of pages in days, not months or years, aligned with WCAG 2AA guidelines at a fraction of traditional costs. Accessibility isn't a privilege, it's a right. Now that you know, ask your agencies a simple question. Are your documents actually accessible?
Welcome to Podcasts by Dr. Kirk Adams, where we bring you powerful conversations with leading voices in disability rights, employment, and inclusion. Our guests share their expertise, experiences, and strategies to inspire action and create a more inclusive world. If you're passionate about social justice or want to make a difference, you're in the right place. Let's dive in with your host, Dr. Kirk Adams.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Podcasts by Dr. Kirk Adams. And I am that Dr. Kirk Adams speaking to you from my home office in Seattle, Washington. And today I have a guest. I'm really excited to engage in some deep conversation. Author, speaker, and boundary expert Cheryl Green is with us today. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And my first experience with Cheryl was being interviewed by her for a book she's writing. She's written a series of books, and I've signed up for her newsletter, and just very interesting food for thought. And her area of interest and focus is boundaries. And she is not necessarily as immersed in disability world and lived or learned experience around disability as most of my guests have been. So I'm super interested in talking with you about boundaries. What led you to focus, what your interest is, how you think about boundaries, how you assist people in living better lives by knowing how to set boundaries. And then I'd really like to talk to you a little bit about some of my thoughts around disability and boundaries and get your take on that. So
I love it.
Before we get into that, for anyone who doesn't know me, I am Kirk Adams. I'm a blind person. That's my primary identity. I am also a father, a scholar, a grandfather now, a husband for 40 years. My retina is detached when I was 5 years old. Became totally blind overnight, went to a school for blind kids, first, second, third grade, learned my Braille, my cane travel, my typing into public school, on up through college, corporate America, banking and finance for 10 years, then into the nonprofit sector, led the American Foundation for the Blind, most recently, Helen Keller's organization. Prior to that, same leadership roles at the Lighthouse for the Blind here in Seattle. And now I have a consulting practice called Innovative Impact LLC. I do whatever I want that I think will be fun and innovative and high impact and will make a difference and make the world a more inclusive place for people with disabilities. I primarily focus on employment, creating career pathways for people with disabilities. I also advise a handful of disability tech startups. I work with some nonprofits to help them scale past the founder stage and increase their impact. And I have a podcast and do some writing and living the life here in Seattle. So Cheryl, want to hand the microphone to you. And I'm always curious how people come to their avocation or their passion. Mm-hmm. Or their purpose. And your purpose is to help people understand boundaries and understand what boundaries, the dynamics of boundaries in people's lives, and how people can live better lives by understanding setting. And you know, I've been reading your newsletter with great interest, so would love to hear your story.
For sure. So yeah, I like to say my mission is to make the world a better place, one boundary at a time.
Okay.
So my story is a little circuitous, if you will. I actually went to graduate school for forensic psychology. I was goth back in the day, and I wanted to hunt down serial killers for a living. Thankfully, that didn't pan out. But it kind of led to an interesting decade and a half, almost two, of really searching for my purpose and my reason for being here.
Uh-huh.
I think the closest that I came before this was animal rescue. I'm a huge, huge animal advocate. And when I was going through my divorce, animals are pretty much what saved me. Between my own dog and volunteering and getting involved, it just completely set my life on a different path. And I did animal rescue for 12 years. I worked in multiple capacities. I was a volunteer. I was a board member. I worked part-time at one point. And then during COVID, I went full-time. I had been running my own content writing business for a little while. And when COVID hit and the world shut down, like many businesses, mine evaporated overnight. People were not so worried about getting blogs out there when they didn't know if they were going to live to see the next week. So I pivoted and I went full time at the rescue and threw myself into taking care of the animals. But I was on the marketing and the communications side of it. So I called myself the director of communication and cuddling, which is a very important job. Thank you very much. So I did that for probably about a year that I was full time. And if you've ever worked in nonprofit, and I know you have, full time is not 8 hours a day. It's 10, 12, sometimes 14 hours a day. And it's, no one really goes into nonprofit to get rich. So each month I saw my savings account going down, and I wasn't necessarily making enough money to keep a roof over my head and kibble in the dog's bowl.
Yeah.
So when my clients started coming back, I wanted to take them, of course, but more importantly, I had to. And it was, it was okay for a little while. I would work my 10, 12 hour days, and then I would come home and work on client projects in the evening. And then, of course, we have, life is still lifing. So my parents were getting older and they were needing more and more of my help. My stepmom had been sick for about 20 years at that point. And I'm still volunteering for everything because I never met a board I said no to. Okay. And
we share that.
Yeah. I have a good book for you to read. So, it got to the point where I was overwhelmed. I was having trouble sleeping, but having trouble staying awake. I was really short with people. My normally pretty positive and pleasant demeanor turned into me snapping at people. And I'm not proud of the amount of times that I said, I just can't effing do this anymore. Okay. So things were getting rough, and what really, really hit me the most was this feeling of resentment that was building. I felt like every request was this like unreasonable demand on my time. And I was starting to resent the people that I loved and even to some degree the animal. And it all kind of hit rock bottom, I guess. It's probably about October of that year. And I was running an errand.
Is this the first year of the pandemic? Or?
This is 2022, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Somewhere around there.
Gotcha.
And I had, or 2021, excuse me.
Okay.
And I was, you know, I'm out running an errand for the rescue. It's probably about 6 o'clock at night and lights, you know, headlights are starting to come on. And I had just been crying nonstop for weeks at that point. And I had this split second thought of, you know, if I just crossed over the median, this could all be over in a second.
Yeah.
And it was just this huge wake up call, obviously. I mean, I didn't want to hurt anybody else for sure. And I didn't want to leave my dogs or my parents without anyone to take care of them. So I managed to pull myself over onto the side of the road and I just sat there crying for a good, you know, 10 minutes trying to calm myself down and realizing that if something major didn't change in my life very quickly, I wasn't going to be around to help anybody. Mm. Took a month off from the rescue and ended up not going back. And over the next 6 months, I cleared off my plate and then watched it all fill back up again.
With different things?
Yep, or different things. Same things?
Different things. Okay.
Different, the same. It just, you know, all the tasks came back and they brought friends.
Okay.
And it took about 6 months before a friend of mine sent me an article about boundaries. I remember looking at it and just going like, oh, this sounds like something I should have.
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned through reading.
Oh, why did your friend send you that article?
Because she probably knew something I didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at that point where I couldn't see what was right in front of me and the problem at hand. I think she just knew something I didn't and knew I was struggling.
Well, that's a good friend.
It is a good friend. I ended up, I figured, hey, if I have this problem, I'm probably not the only one who does.
Right.
So I started writing a book and I did my research, you know, in an effort to write this book and to learn my way, but also to help other people along their path. And I've been teaching boundaries and writing about them ever since. And I finally found my purpose. Really long story.
No, I'm just thinking. So is there, how do you go about learning about boundaries? You said you spent time learning about it, understanding boundaries.
I did. I read everything I could get my hands on.
Okay.
I've been an avid reader since I was 8 years old and, you know, was failing social studies and my parents told me I couldn't watch TV anymore. So the Babysitter's Club was my gateway drug.
Hey, I have a daughter named Rachel who
there you go.
Lives in California because she read a Babysitter's Club book with a girl from California in it. She was 12, said, I'm moving to California.
It had a profound impact on so many, But I read everything I could. I started reaching out to.
But you studied psychology, right?
I did.
Talk about forensic psychology. So I'm imagining there are scholars and people who study boundaries from that lens, right?
From the forensic lens, I haven't.
From the yet, just looking at boundaries from a psychological lens.
Yes, yeah, for sure, and I think. You know, that was part of, I'm very clear in my book. Look, I'm not a therapist. I'm not. And I did give it to a therapist before I published it, because I wanted to be responsible and say like, hey, I don't want to hurt anyone. You know,
okay, say let's be more specific. The book. Tell.
Oh,
tell
sorry.
Us, tell us about
I'm sorry.
The book.
I'm That's just okay. thinking everyone knows.
Yeah, well, a lot more people are about to know.
While I was going through this, I wrote a book called You Had Me at No, How Setting Healthy Boundaries Helps Banish Burnout, Repair Relationships, and Save Your Sanity.
You Had Me at No.
You Had Me at No. And
by Cheryl with an S.
Read. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Cheryl with an S. And, you know, I haven't done an audiobook yet. There is an ebook. Mm-hmm. I haven't done an audiobook yet, but I always tell people if they want to hire me, I'll drive around in the car with them and read.
Well, there you go. So tell us about the book. Give us the Cliff's Notes version of what you teach.
Yeah. So I talk about first why we don't set boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I'm coming from a psychology with a spice of forensics in there. But I also majored in anthropology in college. And I wanted to look at not only the individual, but also the group dynamic that goes into boundaries or a lack thereof. And I think, you know, look, I can teach people to set boundaries all day long, but if they don't actually believe that they have the right to set boundaries, which many, many of us don't or didn't, okay. All the tools and tricks in the world aren't going to help.
And why don't we set boundaries, or why don't we think we have the right to set boundaries?
So the really quick and the really silly answer is we're afraid of getting eaten.
Okay.
So if you look at this from a biological, anthropological standpoint,
yeah.
We've got that lizard brain that's still kind of ruling many of our decisions when we're in a fear state. And we, you know, when we're a part of the group and a part of the tribe and we're all working together, there's somebody that's watching our back. So we right. can go to sleep and, you know, we're not going to get eaten by a passing tiger.
Right.
But if we do something that displeases the tribe, then, you know, we're not pulling our own weight or we feel like we are taking advantage or whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. We're afraid of being cast out. Yeah. And if we get cast out, then a tiger can get us.
Gotcha.
So it sounds silly. And I promise you, no one in the moment is going, if I say no to, you know, picking up my,
right.
you know, sister's kids or something,
right.
I'm going to be eaten. However, right. that's what our brain is actually doing.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I had studied immunity to change. There's a book, Immunity to Change,
interesting.
Kagan Leahy, and the premise is to understand what bad thing will happen if I change. So it's, you know, they talk about weight loss, people quitting smoking, and we know it's good. We know it's good for us. We know we want to do it. We know we should do it. Why don't we do it? Because deep down somewhere, we think something really bad will happen if we do that.
Yeah.
If we change. So that's what you were just reminded me of when we talked about that. We know we should set boundaries. We know we should do what's best for us. We know we should guard our time and our energy.
Yeah.
But we don't, because we're afraid something bad will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, to your point with, you know, if you stop smoking, yeah, you're going to be healthier, but hey, you probably hang around with a lot of other smokers.
Right.
And if you stop smoking, well, there you go. You're out of the tribe.
Yep. Yep, gotcha.
So
then how do we go about changing?
Yeah. So realizing it is the first step, honestly.
Okay.
Knowing that you not only have the right, but you also actually have the responsibility to set boundaries. And that sounds a little bit, you know, a little bit weird, but boundaries are not just something we do for ourselves. they're actually something that improves our relationships, that protects the people around us, that help us serve our clients better. They help us, you know, take care of our children better, whatever your deal is. Mm-hmm. So we actually cause more problems when we don't set boundaries. And I just wrote a blog about this, and I think it might've gone live today, but, you know, people pleasing, we think of that as, you know, I'm thinking about everybody else right now, and I'm just going to do whatever they want just to make them happy. But it's actually really selfish, because we're doing it to protect ourselves from the immediate discomfort of letting someone down. So it's kind of a little flip on it.
Mm-hmm. What types of things? I don't know the language probably is, but I'll fumble my way through this. But what
no judgment.
What types of things do we need to set boundaries around or against, or what types of things that can be negative impacts in our lives do we need to build boundaries? I don't know what words you set boundaries around, set boundaries against.
You're
what
good.
What are the types of things? You know, I can think of the obvious things, like, you know, I just did it today. Will you join our board? I said, sure. Can you watch our kids Friday night? Can you loan me money? Can we build a fence between our yards, and will you pay half? That just happened to me.
Yeah. Oh my god. So the quick answer is everything.
Okay.
The longer answer is, so there's actually six recognized boundary categories, and then I added a seventh.
Okay.
But you're looking.
See, that's what I should have said. I should have said, Cheryl, what are the seven boundary categories?
You're good. Trust me, I don't know a lot of the words for your world, so okay. we're even. It's okay.
So what are the
So they are time, materials, which includes money, physical, sexual, emotional. I don't know how many I just said, but and then I think that was all of them. And then I added one, which is relational, which is pretty much how you allow the people and the animals in your life to be treated. So if you are a leader, you know, are you letting your employees, are you letting your customers, you know, scream at your employees? Mm-hmm. And the reason I came up with this is because I had someone at my house who didn't want my dog putting his cute little face on their leg, and they kicked him.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So that man is no longer welcome in my house or my world. But you know, when we think about boundaries, my very basic definition is how you allow yourself, and by extension, your stuff, to be treated.
Okay.
That's the really unofficial definition there. But you know, when you think about it, I'm going to go out and say absolutely everything in our life comes down to a boundary.
Okay. So I'd like to think through a couple things with you together. So people with disabilities. So first, let's talk about the difference between an impairment and disability. I think you and I talked about that.
Yes, it blew
my mind. You interviewed me for your book. So I have a visual impairment. I cannot see. So my sense of sight is impaired. But that doesn't mean I am always in a disabling situation. So I think the little example I used with you, which I use a lot, is if I'm running that board meeting and I have my agenda in Braille and my committee reports and my finance reports, My visual impairment does not put me in a disabling situation because I'm a Braille reader. I can manage that meeting just as well as a sighted person could with print. But if I walk in, sit down at the conference table, and you slide me a stack of print, then I am in a disabling situation because my impairment does not allow me to interact effectively with the built environment of the print. And there's the three environments, the built, you know, the digital and the social. So, so given that, there's a lot of misunderstanding about disability and impairment and whether a person's in a disabling situation or not. There's a lot of fluidity around that, that the general population who hasn't either lived with a disability or known someone deeply who has a disability, they don't understand that. Wait, an impairment with a disability. And then there's these tropes. There's the heroic trope where you're so inspirational. And I've had people say, "You do so well," as I sit down in an airplane seat and buckle my seatbelt.
Did they pat you on the head at all? I mean, that would be nice.
And then there's the helpless, the assumption that you're not capable. So assumed incompetence. But I got it. Our boundaries are invaded. I thought, you know, sexual terribly. People with disabilities are sexually abused more than the general population. But then there's physical and emotional. So staring. You know, studies show that, you know, people with disabilities are stared at in a way that a person without a disability never would be. Questions people ask.
Right.
You know, I've had people riding a city bus. I just need to ask, how do you get dressed? How do you know what clothes to put on? Taking the Metro bus, reading Braille for many years, going downtown to Seattle for work. I had people dozens of times ask me, "What are you reading?" And I don't hear them asking anyone else on the bus who's reading what they're reading. invading our space and our bodies. How many times have a blind person listening to this, you've been standing at a curb waiting for the light to change, you're using your techniques, you're listening for the traffic to move, so you know, to cross with the flow of the traffic and have someone grab you, physically grab you and propelling you across the street.
Right.
Things that people would never do to someone who didn't have an apparent impairment. So just from your level of expertise, just any thoughts on what I just said? Or
yes. So I mean, so many. The first thing I would say is, and I actually, I'm about to write the chapter where I'm going to talk about our conversation.
Awesome.
So this came at a really good time. I stopped this morning right before it just so we could have this conversation.
Okay.
I bet it's going to be more helpful. I think one thing to realize is that most people, I'm not saying everyone, there are some true asshats out there. But most people are not coming from a bad place. Does not make it easier on you. I'm just saying most people are not going like, ha ha ha, there's a blind guy, I'm going to like scare him and drag him across the street.
Right. I would agree with you.
You know, I think for the most part, people are like, hey, they're making an assumption, which is not appropriate, but they're making an assumption that this person needs help. And I can help them, and or asking questions again. I don't think it's most of the time coming from a bad place. I think it's probably coming from I'm curious. I want to learn more, like an inquisitive place. All that to say, not that you should just put up with it. But I think switching the mindset over from, it's kind of like an attack to, it's aggravated helping.
Okay. That's a good.
I like that. And I will say, you know, I have a good friend that I've done rescue with for years. She is a quadriplegic and, you know, has the use of basically one hand. She's in a motorized wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are questions. You know, when I've been out and about with her, especially, you know, we used to go to schools and talk to them about how to care for dogs and cats. But, you know, she, I think, kind of really mastered the art of, you know, if somebody was staring at her, she just said, "Hey, I notice you're looking at me. Did you have any questions?" Mm-hmm. Because usually they're coming from a good place. I think, the cross that you have to bear, not that I've ever used that explanation or that wording, but mm-hmm. is, to set boundaries in situations that other people wouldn't have to, right. is to be able to say, you know, I'm actually not comfortable talking about what happened. Or I don't share that with strangers. Thank you for asking. You know, if you want to continue the conversation, tell me something about you.
Oh, I like that.
You know, if somebody does grab you and it does feel like they're, you know, about to propel you across the street, just saying, "Whoa, hey, you know what? I actually appreciate your concern. However, it's appropriate to ask before touching someone."
Right.
You know, it's those. How do I put that? It's the human decencies that we were supposed to be taught as children. And we've definitely lost in a lot of circumstances. But I think it's aggressive helpfulness in a lot of situations. And I think it's about setting those boundaries, educating mm-hmm. people. And I'll be honest, you educated me. When I set out to write this book, I had absolutely no idea that disability or impairment or accommodations were going to be a part of this. Hmm. It was not on my radar. It is, you know, thankfully something I've never really had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it existed. You know, I didn't know that world was out there. So would I personally ever grab someone at a stoplight? Dear God, no. But I'm sure I have, probably, you know, glanced at somebody for a little bit longer than is comfortable for them. because I did notice that they had something different.
Right.
And I certainly didn't mean anything by it, but I, especially where I am right now, if someone said to me, "Hey, did you have a question?" I would have been like, "Oh man, I'm sorry."
and how about in the internal boundaries? And I'm thinking about, you said educate people, you know, and oftentimes we feel like we're being asked to educate people all day long.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about, you know, picking your battles. You know, when my wife and I are heading out on vacation, we're in the airport all happy, ready to go to Maui. And, you know, the TSA person says, "Can I see his ID?" And I say, "Oh, you need my ID? Here it is."
Yeah.
Am I going to pause and educate that person? I'm probably going to make a decision, you know, not to do that.
Right.
If I'm in a restaurant and the wait, you know, the server comes up and asks my wife, "What would he like?"
Yeah.
You know, I'll probably say, "Well, I'm visually impaired, but I can hear and I can speak.
I'd like to be spoken to directly."
And I love her so much. We've been married 40 years. She often says very brightly, "Dr. Adams would prefer to speak for himself." So, you know, microaggressions.
Yeah.
We have there's a wonderful blind woman named Chansey Fleet. She works at the Andrew High School Talking Book and Braille Library in New York City. And she once posted on Facebook something that had happened to her during the day. And she said, if I want microaggressions, I'll go to the airport. So that's how it stuck with me. But boundaries aren't always set. I'm again mm-hmm. just thinking out loud. They're not always set through interactions with other people. So mm-hmm. there are boundaries that you set for yourself internally, I imagine.
Yes.
That need to be considered. Like just your, like I just said, my decision. No, I'm not gonna. There's a thing called spoon theory that comes from chronic illness.
Yes.
Like you wake up in the morning with eight spoons of energy.
Yes.
And I've got four left, and I'm not going to spend one spoon on educating this, you know, this TSA person.
Yes.
So I choose to keep that spoon in reserve. So just any thoughts around that kind of,
yeah,
that kind of dynamic?
There is very much internal boundaries. I really think every person, whether you've got an impairment or not, needs to make that decision of what am I going to allow to bother me? Mm-hmm. I just finished reading Let Them by Mel Robbins, and it's so simple, it's infuriating kind of thing.
Okay.
And you know, I when we put it in that situation, it's I'm gonna mildly curse here. Let the TSA agent be a dumbass. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. let you not allow that to ruin your day.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier said than done. But you know, we each make a decision whether or not we want to walk around angry our entire yeah. lives. And that falls under emotional boundaries. You know,
right.
we don't have the power to make anybody angry or sad or happy or whatever, and vice mm-hmm. versa. They don't have that power over us. They can trigger us for sure. But ultimately, it's up to us to decide, hey, what's the emotion that I want to sit in right now? You have every right to let that TSA agent ruin your flight and your entire vacation. Or you can just go, dumbass. You know, well, don't call them that because you'll get thrown at the airport. But, you know, you have that option to say it and then just let it go.
Yeah. So I'm imagining of the seven categories, the emotional boundary may be the most challenging.
You know, I find emotional and time. Is, I think, usually the one that most people are aware of having a problem with. And just today, as you said, you agreed to be on a board.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's the time commitment that you just made? And I, you know, I'm not going to ask like whether, you thought through that or whatever, but,
right.
we too often, I think, I call it yes vomiting, which is disgusting. Sorry.
Okay, no. Tell me more.
But for anybody who's ever been asked something, they're like, hey, would you mind? And you're like, yeah, sure. I can do that. And do you want me to do this other thing as well? you know, okay. That yes, I'll do it comes flying out of our mouths before right. Before we can think about it. And I think for the most part, that applies to the time boundaries.
Okay. Well, this time flew by. I love getting your newsletter. I always pause. It always helps me to center my thinking around. And I'm thinking about energy. Using my energy wisely and the myriad pathways before me and the myriad demands on time, energy, and emotion. And you've really been helpful to me in that. So for others who are listening, how can they access your wisdom? What's a good way to connect, to get the book, to sign up for the newsletter?
Oh, I love that. Access my wisdom. I'm going to be using that later and it's going to piss my husband off. they're just accessing my wisdom. So kind of my hub is CherylGreenSpeaks.com. It's Sheryl GreenSpeaks.com. And you can get I've got two things to download on there, both of which will put you on my newsletter. One is for leaders for a professional setting. And the other one is just a how to say no cheat sheet. Mm-hmm. It's just to help you
that.
With those words. and I've heard good things. People have it laminated and on their wall.
Yeah. That was good.
And then my book is available on Amazon. Again, it's You Had Me at No. And I do speaking engagements. I do consulting for businesses. And I would just, like I said, I'd love to help make the world a better place, one boundary at a time.
Nice. And you've taught me a lot. I continue to learn from you. I appreciate it. I love the fact that you said you've learned some things from me.
So that's
how we all work together.
Yes.
And have collective action on making the world a better place. So for me, if you'd like to get in touch, I'm on LinkedIn every day. I'm Kirk Adams, PhD on LinkedIn. I have a website, drkirkadams.com. I have a newsletter, and I would love to connect with anyone out there who wants to talk about making the world more inclusive and empathetic place. So thank you for listening to Podcasts by Dr. Kirk Adams. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Podcasts by Dr. Kirk Adams. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Don't forget to subscribe, share, or leave a review at www.drkirkadams.com. Together, we can amplify these voices and create positive change. Until next time, keep listening, keep learning, and keep making an impact.